don't have any thunderstorm, and I wonder what that is. I didn't think that was a good sign.
She's been busy.
But they had, you know, the rain, they needed that.
All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So welcome back. We're here tonight, a little bit of a departure from our normal course of study. We normally devote our time to Parshas HaShavua, but being that we're just a few days away from Purim, I thought it would be apropos to focus a little bit on an interesting Purim topic. Our shir tonight is sponsored by Mrs. Kalmar, in commemoration of the yard site of her husband, Zichron Livracha, Matisyahu Ben Yosef, Dr. Martin Kalmar, and we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah that his neshama has an aliyah.
Amen.
So we begin with number one. Amar Rava, Nechayiv Inish Levasume Bepuria, Adelo Yada Ben Araham Levarach Mordechai. So the Gemara, Rava, makes a halachic statement. The person is obligated. Now, Levasume literally means what? Literally. So we translate it as intoxicated. It actually means fragrant. It means that you drink so much that literally the wine is coming out of your pores, that you smell like wine. So a person is obligated to become, and he used lashon of obligation, to become intoxicated, inebriated on Purim, until a person doesn't know they're seeing Ara Haman, cursed is Haman, and Baruch Mordechai. So that's the end of Rav's statement. The Gemara then tells a story. Rabba Rabbi Zera, of the Su'udas Purim Bahadi Adadi, Rabba and Rabbi Zera, we're having Purim Su'udah together. What happened? Ifsum, they got drunk. Kam Rabba, Shachte the Rabbi Zera. Rabba got up and literally slaughtered. He killed Rabbi Zera. Now, just as an aside, the Marsha points out over here that Shachte. Shachte does not have to literally mean kill. The Marsha says, for example, Shachte can mean he forced him to drink a lot. And again, why would the Gemara use the wording of Shachte for forcing someone to drink a lot? Because obviously, if one's drinking a lot, there's a lot of liquid going down the throat. So according to the Marsha, it could very well be that Rabba encourages or pushes Rabbi Zera to drink a lot, and Rabbi Zera gets alcohol poisoning. Whatever it is, so whether he literally killed him or whether Rabbi Zera is just on the cusp of death because of alcohol poisoning, what happened? Lemachar, the next day, when Rabba realized what had happened, Boi Rachame, he davened, Va'achye, and Rabbi Zera was healed. An incredible miracle. The Gemara goes on. Lishana, next year, Amarle, so Rabba came to Rabbi Zera again, and he said, listen, I have a great idea. Neseimar vina avitudas por bahadi adadi. I have a great idea. Maybe he didn't remember last year, or maybe he felt, you know, it'll be a little bit more moderate this year. I have a great idea. Let's have Purim Su'uda together. Rabbi Zera says, Amarle, thank you, but no thank you. Lo b'chol shaita u'shaita misrach ish nisa. Miracles do not happen all of the time. So this is the extent of the Gemara's commentary on the concept of drinking on Purim. So here, pretty much, interestingly enough, Rava makes a statement, you should drink on Purim, not just drink on Purim. Rava makes a statement, you should become intoxicated. You should literally become drunk on Purim. And no one argues on this statement. The question is, how are we to understand this halacha? And what I'd like to try to do this evening is break this discussion into two parts. Halacha and hashkafa. So first of all, what is the halacha on Purim? Just basic, what is the halacha? And then after we understand the halacha, we'll have to understand the hashkafa. Because the truth is, this is Rav's statement is very troubling. Because we will see that if there is one thing that Judaism frowns upon, it's what? Understand something. The beauty of Judaism, is that who said that? Excess. Judaism has, the beautiful part of Yiddish kind of Judaism is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a beautiful world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a beautiful world to enjoy. We're not an ascetic people. We don't believe that the path to holiness is paved with divorcing yourself from the material or from the material world. We just believe that everything has to be enjoyed responsibly and in moderation. Judaism frowns on excess. The truth is, it's excess in the material world. And the truth is, it's also excess in the spiritual world as well. In Judaism, we look for that. The Rambam calls it the Derech HaMamutza, the middle path. So the notion that halacha would endorse and encourage alcoholic excess is problematic both halachically as well as hashkafically. So let's first begin by analyzing the halacha. Yes? That's going, but that's not obligatory. That's not, one could fulfill, one could discharge the obligation without hiddur. And even on hiddur, there's a cap. There's only so much money you're allowed to spend on your lulav. There's only so much you're allowed to spend on your menorah. So there, even with hiddur, there's a cap. So let's analyze the halacha. So I want to share with you a couple of different approaches just to understanding, before we get into the meaning of this, understanding the basic halacha. Look at the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher. Rabbeinu Asher, remember, again, you see over here, born 1250, dies 1327. He was the Talmud of the Maharam of Rotenburg. So the Rosh writes, Amarava, Mechayiv Inish Levasume Beporia Ad Lo Yod Bein Araham LeBaruch Mordechai. So you have to appreciate how the Rosh is a commentary. The Rosh is a halachic commentary. Understand that once upon a time, how did we learn halacha? You had to open up a Gemara, and you found the halacha was in the Gemara. Now, if you've learned any amount of Gemara, you'll know that Gemara it's difficult to learn, but it's even more difficult to come to a conclusion. Because often the Gemara, the Talmud, does not come to a finite conclusion. The Talmud records disputes and kind of just leaves you to your own devices. So over the years, halachic codifiers have come along and based on their incredible breadth of knowledge have been able to come to a bottom line. So the Rosh was one of the earliest halachic codifiers. The way the Rosh codifies halacha is, he quotes the statements of the Talmud that he accepts and he does not quote the ones that he doesn't. It's selective editing. So here the Rush says, essentially, the Rush quotes Rava, and the Rush quotes Rava verbatim, which indicates that according to the Rush, what is the halacha? What is the halacha? Get drunk. Get drunk permanently. Don't know they're seeing Araham and Baruch Mordechai. That's the Rush. If you look at number five, the Ran, Rabbi Nissim, writes the following. If you skip a little bit in number five, do you see where the arrow is? He quotes over here, Kasa of Rabbeinu Ephraim. Now, interestingly enough, this Rabbeinu Ephraim is a very important historical figure. This is Rabbeinu Ephraim of Bonn. Rabbeinu Ephraim of Bonn is very important because you know that in the 1100s, there was a major massacre in the city of York. There is one chronicle that was left from the massacre of York, and that was written by Rav Ephraim of Bonn. So he's a very important historical figure, as well as a halachic figure. So the, I'm sorry, York. York, England. England. Yeah. So now, Google it. Sorry. So look at the Ran says. He says, V'kasa Rabbeinu Ephraim. He calls Rabbeinu Ephraim who says the following. Zelushono, Me'ahu uvda dikam rabba v'shachte the Rabbi Zera ki de'isa b'gemara idchilei memra d'rabba v'lo shapir dami l'me avad hachi. So Rabbeinu Ephraim comes along and says, one second. Rush, you're just accepting the statement of Rava as a halacha, but one second, you're missing a major piece. What did the Gemara do? The Gemara quoted Rava, and then what did the Gemara do right after quoting Rava? What did the Gemara do? The Gemara quoted a story about two individuals who did what? Who took Rava's advice, and what happened? Disastrous consequences. Okay, there was divine intervention. HaKadosh Baruch Hu stepped in. So Rabba was able to go ahead and, Rabba was able to daven and heal Rabbi Zera. But at the end of the day, says Rabbeinu Ephraim, do you know why the Gemara quotes the story? The Gemara quotes the story to tell you that Rabba is wrong. So again, on this, let me frame this the right way. Rava makes a statement, you should drink on permanently, don't learn in Araham and Baruch Mordechai. Okay? The Gemara quotes a story of two rabbinic sages, Rabba and Rabbi Zera took this advice, and it ended with disastrous consequences. The Rabbeinu Ephraim explains that the reason the Gemara inserted that story was to tell you that Rava is wrong. Do not follow Rava's advice. Do not drink excessively on Purim. So here you have the two opposite ends of the spectrum. You have the Rush in number four, Rabbeinu Asher, who just simply takes a statement of Rava at face value, doesn't seem to pay all that much attention to the story immediately afterwards. And the Ran, according to Rabbeinu Ephraim, who understands that the inclusion of the story is there to tell you that the halacha does not follow the position of Rava. Then if you look at number six, there's a compromise position. The compromise position is made up of the Rambam, the Meiri, and ultimately the Beis Yosef. The Rambam writes the following. Keitzad chovas su'udazu. Remember again, one thing that everyone agrees with is that the nature of drinking on Purim is not a standalone concept, but rather is part of the mitzvah of su'udah. It's part of the mitzvah of having a celebratory meal on Purim. So Rambam says, how do you celebrate this meal? Sheyochal basar. You should eat meat, assuming you like meat. The talking su'udah noah. And create for yourself a nice suit in accordance with your means. V'shosei yayin, you should drink wine, ad sheyishtaker, until you become inebriated, v'yeiradim b'shichros, and you should drink so much that what? That you fall asleep. Now, where does the Rambam get falling asleep from? So the Rambam has a very interesting and intriguing insight. The Rambam says, the Gemara says he's supposed to, Rav says he's supposed to drink until when? Until when? Until you don't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. Says the Rambam, I have a very easy way to accomplish that without getting yourself into any trouble. And that's how, drink until you fall asleep. When you're asleep, you don't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai, and you don't run the risk of engaging in any type of outrageous behavior. So here already you see the Rambam coming in somewhere in the middle. He's not like the Rush. He's not just accepting Rava's statement as is, but he's not like Rabbeinu Ephraim, who is rejecting Rava's statement because of the story that followed. Instead, what he's saying is, no, drink, and even drink a lot. But how do I avoid getting myself into a potentially negative situation? Essentially, drink until I'm so tired that I want to go to sleep. And in fact, if you take a look at number five, number seven, so the Karban Nisanal says something very interesting. The Karban Nisanal was Rav Nisanal Weil, who lived from 1687 to 1769. And he writes the following. He says, Aval HaKavona, Shemuchuyov Lehetiv Leib Ayidei Shtiyas Yayin Harbe. What the Gemara is coming to teach us is that a person should drink a lot of wine so that they should be happy. Ad Delo Yada, what does it mean until you don't know? Ad Velo Ad Bichlal. Until, but not including. So according to the Karban Nisanal, when it says that you should drink ad lo yada bein arham ala barach Mordechai, that you should drink until you don't know between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai, that's until but not including that point. Why? Dezehu higia l'shichruso shel lot. So apparently, there's something called lot drunk. What happens if you get lot drunk? So we know what happened when Lot got drunk. Well, Lot got drunk, he engaged in an act of incest. He engaged in an act of incest with his daughter. And in fact, he got so drunk that he did it two nights consecutively with each of his daughters. So what Lot drunk represents is a state of inebriation where a person does not know the line between right and wrong. So what the Karban Nisanal picks up on is when the Gemara says that you should drink until you don't know there is an Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai, it sounds like what the Gemara is saying is you should drink until you don't know the difference between good and evil, between right and wrong. The Karban Nisanal says that can't be true. The halacha would never allow me to get to that state because that is the state of moral abandon. That is the state where people do terrible things. Therefore, ad means you could drink up until that state. But don't, God forbid, allow yourself to get lot drunk. Don't allow yourself to get to the actual state where you literally can't distinguish between Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai, between good and evil. And if you look at number eight, the Beis HaBechir, the Meiri says again, Chayiv Adam Laharbos B'Simcha B'Yom Zeh U'Ba'achilo B'Shtiyah Achlo Yetzach Shem Davar Mikom Akom. Look what he says. You should eat, you should drink. Mikom Akom Ein Anu Metzuvin Le'Shtaker. But you know what? We shouldn't get drunk. U'Lahav Chis Atzmeinu Mitoch HaSimcha. Or to lessen our standing, to lessen ourselves through frivolity or lightheadedness. Shalonitztavinu al simcha shal hololus v'shal shtus. Because on Purim we are not obligated to celebrate. Hololus means like emptiness, frivolity, shtus, silliness, stupidity. Ela b'simcha shal tanuk. But rather we are obligated to have true pleasure on Purim. Shenagia mitocha la'avas Hashem v'hoda al anisim shena'asalanu. Says the Beis HaMechira, what's the goal on Purim? The goal on Purim, truth is the goal on Purim is the same goal as every single other day, which is to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Chazal said, you know, the material world can be a very powerful tool in coming closer to God. Wine can be a very powerful tool in coming closer to God. Basar, meat can be. So therefore, use it responsibly. Use it in a way. But says the Beis HaMechira, says the Meiri, we're not supposed to get drunk. We're not supposed to lessen ourselves. We're not supposed to engage in silly behavior because that will distance us from God, not bring us any closer. Number nine, the Beis Yosef of Yosef Karo writes, Kasav Archos Chaim, Chayiv Inishlo Asume Bepuri, a person is obligated to drink on Purim. Lo Shi Yishtakir, don't get drunk. Shashichrus Isra Gomor, because drunkenness is a bona fide prohibition. Look what he writes. Ve'ein Lecha Aveira Gidola Mizo. Wow, very strong wording. There is no greater sin than drunkenness. Now, what's the sin in drunkenness? It's not that drunkenness itself is a sin, but rather what? It paves the way and opens the doors for what? Goring Megili Arayos, immorality. Shvichos Damim, God forbid bloodshed. Vekama Averos Zulosan. And many other sins. So what should you do on Purim? Ach sheyishte yoser milimudo ma'at. Drink a little bit more than you're normally accustomed to. So we see 6 through 9 represent what? Represent our compromise positions. So you have the Rambam telling us that what? What should we do? What should we do, Rambam? Drink until you fall asleep. Right? Drink a little more until you fall asleep. Then you're ad lo yada. Karban esanel, drink until the point. Ad velo ad dichlal. Don't make sure you don't drink until the blur, until the lines of right and wrong are blurred, but only until that point. The Meiri, no, maybe don't even get drunk at all. Drink a little bit, but make sure whatever you're going to drink brings you closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Beis Yosef, drink a little bit more than usual. So now you see over here, we have the Shitos, the Halachic positions and opinions are all over the place. So again, just to review, we have the Rush who says what? The Rush. Drink, like Rava says, drink until you don't know that they're seeing Arahaman and Baruch Mordechai. Then we have the Rabbeinu Ephraim, the Ran, on the other side of the spectrum, who says what?
No drinking.
Okay, so whether he says no drinking or no drunkenness, but it sounds like what he's saying is, Rava, no, this just wine is not a major part of Purim. You want to drink a little bit like you normally would with the Suda, that's fine, but there's no additional mitzvah to drink. How do we know that? Because the Gemara includes the story of Rabba and Rabbi Zera afterwards. So those are the poles. Those are the extremes. And then everyone else falls out in the middle. So how do we paskin? How do we hold, practically speaking? Take a look at number 10. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Chayiv inish levasume bepuria ad lo yod bein arham lebaruch Mordechai. So this is one of those times where it's good to be a Sephardic Jew. Because Rav Yosef Karo, right? Rav Yosef Karo, who again is the Maran, right? He's the Rebbe for Sephardic Jewry. So what is, he just quotes the Rush. He quotes Rava. So it would appear in the Mechaber's worldview, drink until you don't know the difference between Arahaman and Baruch Mordechai. Comes along the Rambam. Remember, Moshe Isserles, 1500s, Krakow, Poland, adds on his glosses, his footnotes on the Shulchan Aruch for Ashkenazic Jewry. So the Rambam comes along and says, V'yei shomrim, de'ein tzarch lishtaker kol kach. No, there are some say you shouldn't get so drunk. El sheyishte yosre milimudo. Drink a little bit more than you normally do. And then what? V'yashin, and then fall asleep. Omitoch sheyashin, and once you're sleeping, you know the difference between cursed is Haman, blessed is Mordechai. So what's interesting is the Ramah blended a couple of opinions. He included the Aruch HaSchaim in number 9, drink a little bit more than you normally used to. He included the Rambam in number 6 and fall asleep. But look how he ends. Ve'echad hamarbe, ve'echad hamamit. So whether you drink a lot or whether you drink a little. Again, this is one of these areas in Halacha where there is someone to rely on no matter what you want to do. So whether you drink a lot or whether you drink a little, here is the mandate. Ubilvad shi'chavein libo l'shamayim. Just make sure that whatever you're doing is holy. Whether you drink a lot, whether you drink a little, make sure whatever you're doing brings you closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the goal. That's the avodah of Purim. So now we've analyzed the halacha. What about the hashkafa? Because the truth is, the mitzvah is troubling on a theological level. It's troubling that halacha would actually encourage excess. That halacha would, and especially when it comes to alcohol. Because alcohol, people get themselves into an incredible amount of trouble when consuming too much alcohol. So you want to tell me that halacha would give me excess in other areas? Okay, I understand. But in this particular realm, what is the message? Remember, We often don't fully appreciate the full profundity of halacha. Because when we think about halacha, we think about a series of do's and don'ts. So halacha is also that chazal, that the rabbis really told us many incredible moral and ethical norms. They are expressed in legal terms, but there is a moral ethical underpinning. So every time halacha tells me to do X or to do Y, or not to do X or not to do Y, there's a message that's embedded within that as well. So if chazal are telling me to drink on Purim, that means there is some deeper message embedded in this practice. And the question is, what is it? So I want to share with you a couple of approaches. If you look at number 11, the Abudraham, gives a very interesting insight. He says, how could the rabbis tell you to get drunk on Purim? Now the Abudraham makes a very interesting observation. He says, you know, there are a couple of recorded instances of drunkenness in the Torah. And what's the common denominator among all those instances? None of them ended well. Right? We have Lot, which we mentioned before. Of course, even before Lot is Noach, right? Vayita vayachal Noach. The first thing Noach does is he plants a vineyard, he wants trees, and he ends up compromising himself in the eyes of his children. So says the Abu Draham, you know, we have no biblical precedent for drunkenness ending well. If that's the case, then why would Chazal encourage it? And the Abu Draham gives a simple answer. He says, V'yesh lomar, mipnei shekol hanisim shena'asu li'isa v'me'a chashverosh, hayu ayidei mishteh. So the Abu Draham says, because essentially, wine plays a dominant, pivotal role in the Purim story, right? The whole story begins with wine. What happens? Remember, Achashverosh is throwing a party, but that's not what he was referring to. What happens? The Megillah says that the Lev HaMelech was tov bayayin. Achashverosh was drunk. And what happened when he's drunk? That's when he commands, that's when he calls for Vashti to appear before him unclothed. That sets the stage for the execution of Vashti, and ultimately, again, the appointment of Esther. Fast forward a little bit. What does Esther invite Achashverosh and Haman to? Right? A mishtayayim. That's how you knew, right, that they're not Jews, right? Because, again, she only offered them something to drink, right? There was no carving station, nothing by that mishnah. So what happens? So there's mishtayayim. She invites them to two mishtayayim, to two parties, to two different... So says the Abu Draham. And remember, it's at that party that she reveals her identity, and that party ultimately is the demise of Haman. So says the Abu Draham, at every major step throughout the Purim story, wine is present. As such, says the Abu Draham, because of the pivotal role that wine plays a pivotal role in our Purim Suda as well. That's fine, and that's interesting, but what? But what? It doesn't tell us why drunkenness. So remember, we have this concept. For example, we drink 4 cups of wine at the Seder. So you want to tell me there's an obligation to drink a cup, 2 cups, 3 cups, 4 at Purim? Fine. But just because you want to institutionalize wine or incorporate wine in the observance or the practice of Purim doesn't necessarily mean that I should get drunk. Take a look at number 12. Leads us to another approach. The Taz. Rav David Alevi Siegel, who lives from 1586 to 1667, is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. And the Taz here advances what I think is just a spectacular approach. The Taz writes, Chayiv inish levasumei. Rabim rotzim letaretz. Lefarish ma kavar abazeh. So the Taz says, we're all bothered by the same question, which is, what is the meaning of this obligation? And how could the rabbis actually encourage us, or legislate drunkenness? And the Taz writes, velonis yashiv. To be honest, says the Taz, I've heard many answers. I don't like any of them. When you're the Taz, you can say that. Right? So I don't like any of the answers. I'll tell you my answer. And he has that in Nira. Listen to how beautiful this is. The Farish B'derech said, Did Tzorich Ha'adam Lases Shevach Lo Yisparach Al Tova Kifula Sha'aseiman. In reality, says the Taz, we have to give a twofold thanks to God on Purim. What's the twofold thanks? Because God performed two miracles. Ha'echad, Who poronos shehevi who yisparach al Haman, the ilulon isparach Mordechai ela hayanitzon koyis radayenu, ela shebirchu le Mordechai bigdula ma'od, batovi yisera. Listen to this. So says the Taz, what are the two incredible things that God did for us? It's almost like a dayenu. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have just caused the downfall of Haman, even had he not propelled Mordechai to newfound greatness, that would have been enough. Meaning, had you just vanquished our enemies, that would have been fine. But God doesn't just do that. Instead, what does he do? He vanquishes Haman, but then, well, remember how the Megillah ends. The Megillah ends that Mordechai is the Mishneh leMelech Achashverosh. Mordechai is the second in command to the king. So says the Taz something amazing. Says the Taz, that's the meaning of the Gemara. That we're obligated to drink on Purim. Adilo Yada, until we can't tell the difference between what? Ar Haman, which represents the downfall of Haman, and Baruch Mordechai, which represents the elevation of Mordechai to his newfound greatness. Now, what does this mean? What is the Taz trying to communicate to us? I think what the Taz is saying is the following. You know, one of the greatest struggles we have, let me say it differently. When we connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our goal generally is to connect with, how do we connect with God? What faculty do we use to connect with God? Intellect. Why? Why intellect? Because ultimately, again, intellect is the gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, man, that nothing else in this world has. So the goal is to use intellect to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's the problem with intellect? There's a couple problems with intellect. First of all, it's a little bit dry. It's a little bit dry. There's not necessarily emotion associated with it. There's not necessarily feeling associated with it. There's another thing also, that intellect very often causes you to think about things in concrete terms, to analyze things. But the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs an emotional component as well. So you'll say to yourself, well, you know what? Let's leave aside the intellect. Let's connect with God with heart, with emotion. What's the problem with that? Right? Too much emotion gets people into a lot of trouble. The problem with emotion also is, remember, emotions wax and wane. So what happens if one day the emotions towards God are strong, but the next day I'm not feeling it? So one day I serve God, one day I don't serve God. So Judaism is all about a synthesis. We try to create a balance between emotion and intellect. Intellect by itself is dry, but yet emotion by itself could run wild and get a person into a lot of trouble. So we use intellect to keep emotion in check, but we use emotion to be able to pepper intellect with a little bit of feeling, with a little bit of warmth. The Taz says something amazing. Purim is not a day of service from the intellect. Purim is a day of serving God from your heart. Purim is a day, the Taz says, of falling in love with the Ribono Shel Olam. You know, sometimes if you have the privilege to spend time with someone who you love, so the truth is, first of all, there's nothing you even have to say. You just enjoy being in that person's company. If somebody were to ask you, tell me, why do I love my wife? Why do you love your husband? So the truth is, a lot of times you say, you know what, I can't really give you an answer. I can tell you what I like about them. They do this, they have this. But the truth is, the power of love is that love is an all-consuming emotion. And it often defies intellectual description. Says the Taz, you know what the avodah, the goal of Purim is? To fall in love with the Ribono Shel Olam. The goal of Purim is to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I love you, and I feel enveloped by your protective embrace. Why do I feel that way? So why do I feel that way? So the answer is, I can't tell you why, but I just feel it. And says the Taz, that's where the wine comes in. Because wine, clinical tests have shown that if there's one thing that wine could do, it's what? It dulls the intellect. It dulls the intellect. Wine has the ability to make you a much more emotional individual and a much less intellectual individual. Says the Taz, that is exactly the goal. During the rest of the year, we need a balance. You can't be too emotional. You can't, you know, Soloveitchik writes about this extensively, that really our goal is to rein in our emotions. Our goal is to allow the intellect to master emotion, not obliterate emotion, but master emotion. Says the Taz, there is one day throughout the year that is all emotion, that is all heart. Chayiv inish levasume bepuria. We drink the wine. Why? Dull the intellect, amplify the emotion, amplify the heart. And when should you drink? When should you drink? Until ad lo yada beit arham lebarach Mordechai. If you could still articulate, oh yeah, God did this and God did that. If you could analyze the Purim story through an intellectual lens, then what? You haven't drunk enough. Then you need to drink a little bit more, because the goal, dull the intellect, amplify the heart, spend a day, bless you, falling in love, bless you, with the Ribono Shel Olam. That's the goal of Purim. And that's where the alcohol comes in. Again, dull the intellect. Dull the intellect. Not because you want to check out, but because I need to amplify my lave. Purim is the day where we literally feel so enveloped by the love and protective embrace of the Ribono Shel Olam. Number 13, Rav Kook. Rav Kook takes a different approach. Rav Kook writes, he says, Nichnas Yain Yatzasod. You know, Rav Kook, if you've learned Rav Kook's writings are very difficult to understand. Rav Kook wrote, first of all, in a very poetic Hebrew, and also something amazing. If you ever have I might have mentioned this in the past, if you ever have the opportunity to go to Beit HaRav, you can go to Rav Kook's house. It's actually amazing. It's right by Ben Yehuda. If you just write, it's amazing. It's like in the center of town. So they have Rav Kook's manuscripts on display. So what's amazing, if you've ever seen manuscripts, so you know, Rav Kook's manuscripts, there's not one erasure. Rav Kook never erased. When Rav Kook wrote, he wrote in a free flow of consciousness, and it came out as a finished product. You know, for me, one of the hardest things is to write because you have to go back, you have to analyze this word, change that word, change that sentence. One page piece could take 5 hours. And again, and that's with a word processor where you don't see the erasures. Rav Kook had such a connection between his heart, between his soul, between his pen, between his mouth, that what came out was already a finished product. So Rav Kook writes the following. He says something amazing. He says, you know, drink on Purim, nichnas na yayin yatsa sod. So wine comes, bless you, wine comes in, secrets come out. So generally, the way we understand this concept is not in a good way. Meaning what? We all have secrets. We all have secrets. We all have things that the truth is are not for public consumption. We have things that we want to keep to ourselves that, by the way, we're supposed to keep to ourselves. And what happens? There's an issue, says the Gemara. Wine comes in, and what happens? The inhibitions are lowered, and all the secrets come out. Rav Kook understands this concept in a totally different way. He says, look what he writes. First line, number 13. Nechnasan yasasod, ume'od anu tzrichim bechayenu. Oh, how much, says Rav Kook, we need our secrets to come out. We need our secrets to come out and be revealed. Because it's only if our secrets come out that we'll understand ourselves. We will discover what is hidden inside. Rav Kook says something amazing. Rav Kook says, you know, we're all very different. But if there is one common denominator we share, it's that we all have an incredibly beautiful, untapped reservoir of holiness within. We all possess magnificent, immeasurable holiness and kedusha. And if there's one other common denominator we have, it's what? It's that none of us have fully acknowledged or realized it. Why, says Rav Kook? Rav Kook says, because, you know, most of us like to pretend that we're ordinary. Why is it good to pretend you're ordinary? Why?
Right.
No expectations. No expectations. Essentially, I can just coast. And, you know, once in a while, if I do something great, I'll get an incredible yashar koach. People are going to wonder, wow, where did that come from? Right? And I could retreat back into the shadows after it. Because if I acknowledge that I'm great, if I acknowledge that I have the capacity to be great, suddenly again, I have to live my life in a different way. If I really believe that I could be something magnificent, that means I have to actualize my potential. That means I have to make incredible decisions about the nature and quality of life that I lead. That means that when I underperform each and every day, it's not because I can't do more, but it's because I'm choosing not to actualize my potential. Therefore, says Rav Kook, most of us live life in a disguise of ordinary mundanity. We're just regular people. And to take it a step further, says Rav Kook, very often, because we all do things wrong, it's inevitable part of the human condition, we often think of ourselves in negative terms. And sometimes we even think of ourselves as a Haman. And says Rav Kook, the Jew always has to realize that no matter what you've done, you're never a Haman. Inside, it may be buried beneath many layers of obscured impurity and life mistakes, but deep down within each of us, there is a holy, magnificent Mordechai who is yearning to get out. There's a magnificent Mordechai who is yearning. Let me out. Let me do something great. Let me accomplish something in this world. We suppress our inner Mordechai. You should see someone about this. Right, we go ahead, we suppress that inner Mordechai. We keep him in check because if I let him out and I let myself and the world know what I can really do, then suddenly the expectations of me grow exponentially. So we push him down, we suppress him, we bury him beneath many layers, and in fact, we convince ourselves that we're more like Haman than Mordechai. Says Rav Kook, that's the whole point of the drinking. We need to get the secrets out. So what happens? We put up so many walls. And so we need to take down the walls, because if you take down the walls, says Rav Kook, you don't have to be afraid. You see, the Gemara, everyone else is afraid that if you drink a little bit, what's going to come out? Rav Kook says, I'm not afraid what's going to come out. I know it's going to come out. Your inner Mordechai is going to come out. Just sometimes we build our walls so high. We suppress the Mordechai so much that Kedusha, that holiness is stifled. They can't get out. Says Rav Kook, the mitzvah on Purim is Chayiv Inish Levasume Bepuria. Drink. Why? Because get rid of the notion that you're a Haman. And instead what? Accept, acknowledge, and actualize the fact that we are each really a Mordechai. It's true. That actualization comes with incredible responsibility. That realization comes with an incredible amount of responsibility. But it's one that we nevertheless must accept. The mitzvah of drinking is to let the secret, says Rav Kook, which is that we are each a Mordechai, out into the open. Which finally leads us now, actually, I'm sorry, Naya, one more. Chachmas Manoach, number 14. So the Chachmas Manoach, 17th century, Rav Manoach Handel of Prague, writes the following. Now he goes in a totally different approach. He says the following. He says, O Yishlomar, I'm in paragraph A, 14a. Dilamashal nakte al shiyashlich kol adam hakina v'hasina, shiyeshlo ach habeiro milibo bepurim. Let me tell you outside. The Chachmas Manoach says that very often we have conflicts with people. And very often we have very acrimonious, very difficult relationships with people. And the truth is sometimes we really don't like people. And says the Chachmas Manoach, often we don't like people for one of two reasons. Either because they've done something wrong to me. Sometimes people wrong us. And sometimes people wrong us in very significant ways. And sometimes they're not even sorry that they wronged us. And so we have incredible ill will towards that individual. And other times we have ill will towards people. Why? Because if we're honest, we're jealous of them. I'm jealous that that person has accomplished X. I'm jealous that the person has acquired Y. I work just as hard. I'm smarter. I'm better. Whatever else we say. And yet he or she has all of this. And I don't, says the Chachmas Manoach, or in other words, what happens? In life, we have our Hamans. Our Hamans are the people who have wronged us. And in life, we have our Mordechais. And the Mordechais are the people who accomplish, do, acquire more, and we're jealous of them. And that jealousy ultimately breeds a certain amount of animosity. Says the Chachmas Manoach, what is the entire Avoda of Purim? What is our entire mandate on the day of Purim? Not a simple, but one mandate: to reconcile, to come together as a people, achdus, to unify. In fact, again, remember, Chazal writes, the Gemara writes, that how did Haman sell us out to Ahasuerus? He says, Ahasuerus, yeshno am echad, mefuzar umefura. There is one nation, and they're scattered all over the place. That's not a geographic statement. That is a peoplehood statement. That is a national statement. What Ahasuerus is saying, you want to see the quality of these people, normally you would assume that if people are a minority and people are persecuted, what would happen? They would stick together. So Haman says, Ahasuerus, you're not going to believe it. These people, these Jews, they're a minority. They're persecuted. They're in diaspora. And yet what? They fight. It's amazing. Who does that? I mean, we do it. It is the great anomaly of the Jewish people. Says the Chachmas Manoach, the Avoda of Purim is to prove Haman and all the subsequent Hamans wrong. Yes, we fight. And yes, we argue. And we do so quite vociferously and intensely. But understand, at the end of the day, we love each other in such an intense way. So says the Chachmas Manoach, what's the job on Purim? The job on Purim is to reconcile with your Hamans, and to reconcile with your Mordechais. Reconcile with the people who have wronged you, and reconcile with the people of whom you are jealous because they have more or have accomplished more in life. But says the Chachmas Manoach, it's very nice to tell people to go ahead and reconcile. But what's the problem? It's difficult. What am I going to do? I'm going to show up at I have my Haman. I'm going to show up at my Haman's door and say, hey, Haman. I mean, don't call him Haman. But hey, you know, you've wronged me. Let's reconcile. Or I'm going to reconcile. So says the Chachmas Manoach, what did Chazal do? They gave us a gift. What's the gift? The gift is a license to drink. Because you know what happens? Suddenly, when you drink, the great part about a little bit of wine or a lot of wine is drink enough of it. And what happens? Everyone is your friend, right? You love everyone. Everyone is close. Everyone is a chaver. And so Chazal said, you know what? Sometimes it's hard to reconcile with your Hamans, and it's hard to reconcile with your Mordechais. Therefore, chayiv inish levasume bepuria. Drink a little, drink a lot. Let down your guard a little bit. Let a little bit of the animosity drain away and seize the opportunity while everyone is a little bit on the happier side to reconcile and to mend those strained and broken relationships. So if we bring everything together, we essentially have four really dramatic approaches as to understanding the hashkafa of the mitzvah. So again, we have the Abudraham, You have the Abudraham, who tells us that the reason we drink is just simply because wine is an integral part of the Megillah story. So because everything happened with wine, therefore wine becomes the centerpiece of our Purim celebration as well. Taz, the goal of Purim is what? Is what? Very important. To fall in love with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Our biggest problem is, I've said this before, you know what our biggest problem with God is? Biggest problem is HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us and desires a passionate relationship. But what do we say to him? I think I'd like just to be friends. Right? Or maybe, you know, perhaps we should see other people. Right? I'm not quite ready to come. I love you. I care about you a lot. But, you know, I'm young. I'm not quite ready to settle down. I'd like to see what else is out there. We're, at the end of the day, we're just not ready. The Ribbono Shel Olam was willing to commit. He's ready to commit. He's ready to stand under the chuppah tomorrow. We have the commitment issues with God. Says the Taz, for one day out of the year, let the intellect go and just allow yourself to fall in love with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Don't think about, oh, he did that miracle, he did that miracle, he did this chesed, he did this wonderful thing. Don't think about what God does or what God has done. Just focus on one thing. The Ribbono Shel Olam loves you, and just sit back, drink a little bit, and allow yourself to feel his loving, protective embrace. Rav Kook, the goal of drinking is, let the secrets come out. We have a great secret. Each of us walks around life with an incredible secret. We each have an inner Mordechai. We suppress him. We keep him down for a whole variety of reasons. On Purim, we drink to dispel the notion that we are Hamans and to let the inner Mordechai out. Chachmas Manoach, this is all about interpersonal relationship. Purim is all about interpersonal relationship, all about building Achdus. We have Hamans, we have Mordechais who we contend with throughout our entire life. Drink a little bit, mend those relationships. Come together as a people. No matter what's happened, we have to find a way to somehow be able to move on. Again, not every single relationship is repairable. Some relationships are broken for reasons beyond our control. That's just the reality. But those that are within our control to mend, use Purim, use the wine as the opportunity to do so, which finally brings us to our last approach. I'm sorry? Go right ahead. Right? Yes. Yeah, I don't know if that was a societal issue or what. I don't know. I mean, the halacha doesn't distinguish. Maybe that's it. Somebody has to keep order. Right? No, the halacha doesn't really distinguish. Halacha doesn't really distinguish. I don't know. It might be a societal. I don't know. You have to have a designated driver. Absolutely. Okay. Take a look at number 15. So let me share with you one last approach. So I want to show you something interesting in the Megillah. So in Perek Tes, which is the second to last chapter in the Megillah, so the Megillah here discusses about when Purim became a Yom Tov. So the Megillah says, Al kin ha-yehudim ha-prozim ha-yoshim ba-ari ha-prozos, Amin 15, Pasuk 19, Yotes, the Jews who lived in the cities, unwalled cities, Osim esyom arba'asra l'chodesh adar, Simcha u'mishte v'yom tov u'mishloach moros ishtarei'ehu. So the Megillah says that now this is talking about actually what we call Beshas Maisa. When the miracle actually occurred, the Jews defeated their enemies, and so the Jews in the unwalled cities celebrated on the 14th of Adar. And what did they celebrate? Simcha, Mishta, joy, actual Mishta usually means like physical celebration of meal, Yom Tov, and Mishloach Manos, sending gifts of food one to the other. Okay, fast forward a little bit. In Pasuk Chof, we have now Vayichtov Mordechai es advarim ha'ela. Now, what happens? Mordechai now institutionalizes the Yom Tov of Purim. So Mordechai now creates, remember again, in Pasuk Yotes, what you're reading about over here, is the actual celebration. No one told the Jews to celebrate. It was spontaneous celebration. Why did they celebrate? Because again, they just had this major victory. In Pasuk Chav, Pasuk 20, now Mordechai is dispatching letters, essentially institutionalizing or creating the Yom Tov of Purim. And what does Mordechai write when he speaks about the Yom Tov of Purim? We skip down to Pasuk Haveis 22. When we celebrate Purim, Kayamim Hashanachu Bahem Ayehudim Ayvehem, we will celebrate the days where the Jews rested after fighting their enemies. V'achodesh Asher Nepach Lehem Yogam Asimcha, the month which switched from incredible distress to happiness. U'me'eva L'Yom Tov, from mourning to Yom Tov. La'asos Osam, to celebrate them as Yimei Mishta V'Simcha. So you notice something interesting here? I underlined the two phrases. They're flipped. When the Jewish people observed Purim, they celebrated Simcha Umishta. And when Mordechai created Yom Tov HaPurim, he created them as days of Mishta V'Simcha. Why the switch? Take a look at number 16. So the Maharal of Prague writes something beautiful. He says, it gives actually a very important definition. He explains, ulekach yesh lahaktim asimcha, ki asimcha hu kodemes she'en loze shum hachano, umiyad yochol lihios lo simcha. Aval amishte, sorich eleo hachano gamkin letakin hasu'udah. So the Maharal says something very interesting. The Maharal gives us definitions. What's the definition of simcha versus mishta? Simcha is true emotional joy. Simcha is an emotional experience. Simcha is the emotional manifestation of incredibly beautiful and joyous circumstances. What do you have to do to prepare for simcha? How do you prepare for simcha? You don't. You don't prepare for simcha. Simcha is a state of being that occurs as a result of wonderful circumstances. There's something beautiful, there's something wonderful that happens. The reaction, the emotional reaction to beautiful events is, I'm in a profound state of true joy. That's simcha. What's mishta? What's mishta? Mishta is physical celebration. Mishta means a su'udah, a meal. Mishta means drinking. Mishta literally means a physical celebration. So what the Maharal, using these definitions, there's something amazing that happens. When the people celebrated Purim, when they celebrated their victory, how do they celebrate? How do they celebrate? They celebrated Simcha and Mishta. When the people celebrated, they celebrated as if everything was perfect. They felt a true, profound joy. The world is perfect. Life is wonderful. Everything fell into place. It's mamish. It's perfection. It's perfection. That's simcha. That sense of true joy is the emotional reaction to when things in life are just as they should be. It's simple life perfection. Haman is vanquished. He and his sons were hanged, right? Mordechai is now second in command, right? Everything is going well. And what happens? It's incredible perfection. Incredibly wonderful. Mordechai realizes, however, that the danger is not over. Mordechai realizes that we are not in a state of perfection. Yes, we had a victory, but all is not okay. In fact, if you take a look at number 17, Rava writes again. So actually, this is the Gemara talking about why we don't say Hallel on Purim. So the Gemara says, you know why you don't say Hallel on Purim? Bishlama hasam hallelu avdei Hashem v'lo avdei paro. Elahacha hallelu avdei Hashem v'lo avdei achashverosh. So the Gemara says, you know when we say hello? We say hello for redemption, for a salvation, where God is our only master. But we do not say hello when we still serve a human master. And says the Gemara, guess what? At the end of the Purim story, yes, we were saved from Haman. But understand what? We were still under the dominion and the rulership of an unpredictable, fickle tyrant. Lest you think that Achashverosh was a friend of the Jews. Do not deceive yourself for just a moment. First of all, remember again, the same way he killed Vashti just on a whim, Esther lived the remainder of her life with that same fear. Is my husband going to drink a little too much and wipe me out like he did his previous wife? Remember again, right now the Jews are in the good graces of the king. But who, remember, there's the same king that was willing to send them, to sell them out for utter destruction and annihilation, just because Haman came to him with this suggestion. So Mordechai realizes that what? Mordechai realizes we are not out of the woods. We had a beautiful victory, but life is far from perfect. In fact, if you take a look at number 18, the Torah quotes something amazing. The Torah writes that in the yeshivos, in the Babylonian yeshivos, which remember, Babel was a major Torah center, in the Babylonian yeshivos of Sura and Pumbedisa, they used to say Tachanun on Purim. Tachanun, remember, is the tefillah that we say immediately after Shemona Esrei, right? Which is a tefillah of supplications. It's a tefillah of distress. We don't say it contemporarily, but in the Babylonian yeshivas, said on Purim. Why? Why would you say Tachanun on Purim? Because Purim is not an absolute salvation. Purim was a temporary salvation. We dodged the bullet in Shushan. Things worked out okay. The king is on our side for now. So says Ma, this is what's happening. When the people celebrate, they celebrate how? Simcha Mishta. In the eyes of the people, everything is wonderful. Everything is perfect. Life is just as it should be. Mordechai has a little bit of a panoramic vision, and he realizes that no, life is not perfect. Yes, there's Mishta. We're going to celebrate, and there's maybe a little bit of Simcha, but it'll be Simcha that's induced by Mishta, not standalone Simcha, because life is unpredictable, because we know not what is going to happen tomorrow. We know not what is going to occur down the road. Right now, things are fine. But we live in such a tenuous, unpredictable, tumultuous set of circumstances. So this is why Mordechai, when he establishes the Yom Tov, establishes it ultimately how? As days not of Simcha and Mishta, but rather how? Rather how? Mishta v'Simcha. Which leads us then to an interesting question of how do you deal? So now, how do you deal with the imperfections of existence? So what Mordechai really is looking at over here, and it's such an incredible almost dichotomy. You have the people celebrating like everything is perfect, like Mashiach came, like everything is just great. And you have Mordechai realizing that there are still so many imperfections in existence. There is still so much that is wrong. There is still so much that is broken. There is still so much that is imperfect. So what do you do when you realize that life is so imperfect? What do you do when you realize that as much as there are some nice things, my existence, whether it's as an individual or as a nation, is so imperfect and so broken? And take a look at number 19. I want to share with you something amazing. And we'll tie this all together and then we'll conclude. The Shulchan Aruch writes, interesting halacha, of Ein Mishanin Ma'os Perm L'Tzedakah Acheres. Interesting enough that when you collect money from Matanos L'Avyonim, so money from Matanos L'Avyonim cannot be switched for another tzedakah cause. For example, if I collect money for a poor family, and it turns out that the family needs $1,000, and we collect $2,000, so I have discretion how I use the other $1,000. So I could give it to that family. I can give it to another family. I could give it to another organization. When it comes to monies collected from Matanos L'Avyonim for gifts to the poor on Purim, you don't have discretion. All of that money has to go to the poor. And the Mishnah Berurah makes an amazing observation. The Mishnah Berurah says over here the following. Look at 21 actually. The Tor in his commentary writes over Moshe Gavon Lechalik La'anim L'Purim Ein Roshay Lishnosim L'Tzedakah Acheres Ve'ein Ha'ani Roshay Lo'tzin L'Davar Acher El Yisudas Purim. Listen to this. So now the Shulchan Aruch is talking about the collector. If I collect money from Matanos L'Avyonim, I cannot go ahead and divert some of those funds for some other tzedakah purpose. The Torah comes along and says, oh, and by the way, it's not just for the collector. It's for the pauper also. So let's imagine the following scenario. So pauper, we'll call him Reuven. Reuven gets $500 from Matanos L'Avyonim. And what is that money for? It's a Purim. So Reuven says, but you know what? The truth is, I have to pay my BGE bill. I have to maybe pay the mortgage. I have to pay this bill, that bill. So you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to spend $100 for the Seuda, and I'm going to use the remaining $400 to pay off my bills. The Torah says the Ani, the pauper, is not permitted to do that. He has to use all of his money for his Seudas Purim. Now, interestingly enough, we don't pask in this way. We don't hold this way halacha lemaisa. But just because the position itself is fascinating. Why not? Why can't the ani? Again, Reuven has a whole stack of bills. You got to tell me that he's got to eat steak. I'm happy with chicken. Let me eat chicken and let me pay my bills. No. If you have enough money to buy steak and expensive wine, so why? What's the halacha saying? I believe what the halacha is trying to teach us is that, you know, the greatest mistake we make in life is what? What do we all want? What do we all want?
To be happy.
At the end of the day, we want to be happy. But most of us make an incredible mistake. And what we do is, we say, I'm going to be happy. You know when I'm going to be happy? When I have A, B, C, D, and E. And by the way, I don't just mean like buying stuff. So people say, you know what? I have a health issue. I'm going to be healthy when I resolve my health issue. I have a parnasa issue, a livelihood issue. I'll be happy when my parnasa is taken care of. I'll be happy when my children give me nachas. I'll be happy when I have a good marriage. We have all different things for what we need for our happiness. You know what the halacha is saying? Clinical tests have shown that people who wait to be happy until certain circumstances materialize, what happens? They're never happy. Because you know why? your bucket list of all the things you need, of all the things you need to be happy, one thing is for sure, will never fully materialize, because that's the dynamic of life. The dynamic of life is you never get everything you want. And so if you delay being happy until all the things you need to happen in life happen, you will live life an unhappy person. So what does the Jew do? The Jew accepts the imperfections of existence. I accept the fact that there are things I can change, and there are many things I cannot change. There are certain limitations that they are what they are. There are certain imperfections, they are what they are. There are certain things that are broken, and no matter how much I try to fix them, I cannot. That's just the reality of existence. But at the same time, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to rejoice in the beautiful moments that life does offer me. Because my friends, even if you have many difficulties and many troubles, there are always moments of beautiful simcha in life. You just have to have the courage to seize them and to enjoy them. Don't push them off because life's not perfect. Don't push them off because you don't have everything you want. Don't push them off because everything is not in order. When the opportunity to rejoice presents itself, the Jew understands that, yes, enjoying this moment now will not fix any of my other imperfections. That's okay. The imperfections are what they are. But I will seize, I will pounce on the opportunity to celebrate a small, beautiful simcha, no matter how imperfect the rest of my life may be. That's what the Torah is saying. You know, ani pauper, we've got a lot of problems. We've got a lot of struggles in life. And you know what Purim is all about? So you know what we want you to do? You get that $500. I know you just want to eat chicken. Enjoy the moment. Enjoy the moment. Celebrate the moment at hand. Maximize the moment at hand. And don't let the moment pass, because your life may be riddled with so many other imperfections. That's what Mordechai was saying. You see, Mordechai could have easily said, nope, no celebrations. No celebrations. How could we celebrate? Ahasuerus, he's a nut job. The guy is crazy. He's totally unpredictable. He's volatile. Today they probably call him bipolar. He's not normal. He's not normal. So what? Really, you're going to celebrate? You're going to celebrate? Why? Why? Okay, like I said, we dodged the bullet, but who knows what's coming down the pike? But Mordechai says, no, we can't do that. You know what? Mordechai disagreed with the populace. I'm not going to call it Simcho Mishta. It's not perfect. But you know what? Even in the midst of imperfections, you still have to find the way to have a little bit of Mishta. Even in the midst of life imperfections, you still have to find a way to have Mishta that goes ahead and creates a little bit of Simcha. It's not perfect. But don't wait for perfection to be happy. Find the happiness even in the imperfections of life. Find the happiness even in the midst of a life framework that very often is broken and in disrepair. This is the job. This is the avoda of Purim. And now we come full circle. You want to know what the hashkafa of drinking on Purim is? Why do we drink? Because the truth is, let's be honest, we sit down at the su'uda on Purim, and what happens? You know, Sunday, very nice. And what comes Monday morning? Work. Right? And what happens? And then, you know, the work week begins and all these things. And I have in my head a lot of different things. You know, it's not like Yom Tov. It's not like Shabbos, where, you know, you get to divorce yourself a little bit from the world. No, I'm living in the world. I have all this stuff going on. I have all of my challenges. We each have our peckle. Some of us a big one. Some of us a little one. And you know what? Like, life is difficult. Life is difficult. So you want me to celebrate the fact that 2,500 years ago, the Jews vanquished Haman? Wonderful. Great. I'm very happy. It's fantastic. What does it do for me? And the answer is, what it does for us is, we sit back, and the halacha says, drink a little bit. Remember, whatever you do, drink a little, drink a lot, drink a little bit. Because what does that do? It takes the edge off. It takes the edge off life. And when you take the edge off life just a little bit, what you're able to do is sit back and realize, you know what? I have a lot of challenges. I have a lot of difficulties. But I have a lot of brachas as well. I have so many beautiful things in my existence. I have so many things to be thankful for. Yes, you know, very often they're obscured and eclipsed by my challenges. So we take a little bit of wine or a lot of wine in order to go ahead and set my mind free, not to focus on all that is wrong, and allow myself a little bit of intellectual, emotional expansiveness to be able to see all of the beautiful blessing. We have many Hamans in our life. We all face many challenges, but we also have much beautiful Mordechai Bracha. And that's the avodah of Purim. Purim is the true Yom Tov of the human condition because Purim reflects life. Life is not perfect. Life is ridiculously imperfect. Life is filled and riddled with challenge and shortcomings. And too often we make the mistake of becoming overwhelmed with the difficulties and the negativities of life, and it blocks out everything that is good. Purim is the day of Mishta Usimcha. Purim is the day of imperfect celebration. And so Chazal gave us this incredible opportunity, this license, to drink a little bit, to drink a lot, take the edge off. Don't just see the imperfections and see the beauty, even in imperfect life. Seize the opportunity to celebrate the wonderful things that do exist, even amidst the whole sea of imperfections of life. So, to tie this all together, what's the halacha? The halacha is, as we said, Echad hamarbe ve'echad hamamit. So what I would tell you is, whether you're going to drink a little or whether you're going to drink a lot, you'll consult your local Orthodox rabbi, which you should do. Make your own decisions. Whether you drink a little, whether you drink a lot. Number one, make sure that Purim is a day of coming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Make sure that it's a day of falling in love with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Make sure it's a day where ultimately we try our best to reconcile with those who perhaps are our Hamans or our Mordechais. Whether you drink a little, whether you drink a lot, let your secrets come out. Mordechai is yearning to get out. Let him out. Let him out. Knock down the walls and let the inner Mordechai get out. And most importantly, whether you drink a little, whether you drink a lot, take time on Purim to sit back and look at your life in full panoramic view. Don't just see your challenges. See your blessings. See your brachos. Don't just see that which is broken, but see that which is beautiful, which is radiant. Don't just see the imperfections, but see the beautiful brachos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu indeed blesses and conveys to each of us. And let us hope that in the merit of Amir Tzah Hashem, having a meaningful Purim experience of whether we drink a little, drink a lot, actualizing all of these ideas and ideals, let us hope that although we celebrate the Yom Tov of Purim, we remember that it was an incomplete salvation. But let us hope that Amir Tzah Hashem, in the zechus and the merit of internalizing all of these important life lessons, let us hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us a complete geula, a complete redemption, a redemption when we are no longer the servants of Achashverosh, but a redemption when we have the privilege of saying, Avdei Hashem Anan, that we are truly, only, and solely the servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.